Coming up, Lois Smith joins Ileana in just a minute.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
And now, it's the I Blame Dennis Hopper podcast, starring Ileana Douglas. Eavesdrop with Ileana as she interviews Hollywood's most prominent players about filmmaking, acting, and what really happens on the set of your favorite flicks and TV shows.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. Welcome to the I Blame Dennis Hopper podcast. I'm here with my lovely co-host, Tamara Bird.
Hi, everybody.
And we are especially honored today. We're going to be joined by actress Lois Smith. A complete honor. Of course, she's worked in theater, television, and film since the early days, and some notable theater roles include The Iceman Cometh, The Grapes of Wrath, which was a Steppenwolf production, which
I was
lucky enough to see. Sam Shepard's Buried Child. She's appeared, of course, in dozens of television shows and live television, which we're going to talk about, and many memorable film roles, including her film debut, East of Eden, Five Easy Pieces, Dead Man Walking. But this year, Lois is having just an incredible year.
Banner year.
Being in two movies, the star of Marjorie Prime, Michael Almeredo's film, and Greta Gerwig's movie Lady Bird, which just took home the honors the other night
at
the Golden Globes. Yeah. And we also have a family connection. So let's get to it. Please welcome Lois Smith. Look at you there. You look fantastic.
Hello.
Yeah, Lois joining us by Skype because she's so busy working.
That's true.
She's not in Los Angeles for a live interview, so that's exciting.
My first thing is just to say congratulations and that you are having certainly a fantastic year with both Marjorie Prime and Lady Bird. Are you enjoying the accolades?
Yes, accolades are nice. It gets a little busy and maybe a little too much traveling, but yes, I am enjoying it.
it's funny. I have to mention this because you have mentioned it in so many interviews, and I'm very excited to learn something today. But your Broadway debut was in a play called Time Out for Ginger, which starred my grandfather, Melvin Douglas.
What?
And you were in the show. So
teenage daughter, yes. And one of three teenage daughters in that play, yes.
And tell me, how did you get cast in the show? And did you like working with my grandfather?
Oh, indeed I did. And we became friends. And actually, he invited me and my husband then to a Thanksgiving dinner between shows one day during that run of Time Out for Ginger.
That's wonderful.
Also, one of my very favorite stories about theater stories for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you heard this one. It's so dear. We played all season in this play, Time Out for Ginger. My character, who was the middle of the three teenage daughters, was going off at the last scene of the play to do she was dressed as Queen Victoria and going away to the school play. Mm-hmm. And my mother and father, Melvin Douglas and Polly Rolls, were saying goodbye and they were coming to the play. And as I left, having been instructing them how to behave when they got to the school to see the play, the very last night, we played all season, I think from November to June, the very last performance on Broadway, as I made my last exit out the door, Melvin ad-libbed, "She's going to be a great actress, that kid." It was, it certainly fit, but it was, honestly, it still warms my heart every time I think about it. What a lovely thing to do.
Wow.
It was not only Broadway debut, it was my first job as an actress.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And then you worked together again on a play called Do Not Go Gentle Into the Night, also with
a television play. Yes. Yeah, we did.
And how was that? And how was that experience? Because I know you did a lot of live television at the time.
That one was later and was not live. I think it was tape, I believe. I started in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
In New York, there was lots of live television and they were plays on television. It's the damnedest thing, you know, hard to believe now. There were 8 or 10 shows that did a new play every week. Some of them half hour, some of them an hour long.
And
that's how I started working on television, in plays.
The array of people that you worked with. Mary Astor was one of the people of note. Of course, Robert Montgomery. Were you intimidated at all because they were big Hollywood stars?
There were times when I think I had moments of intimidation, but mostly that's really not what happened. I don't think. No, people tend to be gracious. Mm-hmm. I think. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Marjorie Prime, which is just a beautiful film, and such a unique experience because you did the play. And then you did the film, and then you went back and did the play. And that's very unusual, except for...
Very unusual,
Maybe
it's been a remarkable journey. It really has been. From the time that the play was just written, Jordan Harrison's play, Pam McKinnon, the director, brought it to me to read, and I was so excited about it. You know, by now, this is probably almost 5 years ago. So it's been a long journey, a long ride with this piece, which I love. And when I first read it, I think I was more excited about it than any new play I can remember. So, I've been with it a long time.
And then the director, Michael Almereyda, went to see the play in Los Angeles, which is such a wonderful story. It sounds as if you inspired him to make the film.
He and I had been friends for quite a long time. And he knew I loved this play. And he came to L.A. to see it. This was the first production of the play. And he liked it very much and thought right away it's something he'd like to make a film of. And with me, because we were friends. And and it happened, you know. I guess I introduced him to Jordan and they worked it out. Mm-hmm. And Michael did the adaptation and directed it.
And in the film version, it's set in a beach house. Were you in an actual beach house, or
we shot it at Amagansett on Long Island. We were actually in two houses. Mm-hmm. One of them was nearer to the beach, and the main house that we shot most of it in, they both had a balcony that looked the same, so Michael could make it one house. But yes, that was Michael's addition, having, and I think in a sense I've sometimes said I think casting the ocean was a very good move.
I agree.
The ocean is so important in the film, and of course in the play it takes place in one room, so it's very different.
I felt as if the addition of it being in a beach house and, as you said, the ocean gave it the sense of act breaks that you don't have in a film, but that it get
that's it, interesting. Yeah,
you know, the waves come in and out and you have a sense of reflection of, you know, the curtain comes down and then it comes back.
It's interesting. There's a passage of time in the play, and in the movie that's more pronounced and more real. Actually, the weather changes, and there is an extension of time, a sense of that, which is present in the play but more pronounced in the film.
And with the wonderful other actors that are in it, it's an all-star cast, John Hamm and Tim Robbins. And he is your prime. Were you a fan of Mad Men before
work? I've not seen very much of Mad Men, I'm sorry to say. I don't see a lot of television, so I miss a lot of good things. But I'm just not in the habit of watching very much in recent times anyway, so... But I had met him a little bit earlier, and he's terrific. He's a doll.
You have such a history with the Actors Studio and that style of working. So when you're working with, and you'd worked with Tim Robbins before, I know that, on Dead Man Walking.
He directed me, but we'd never worked together as actors. He directed me in Dead Man Walking.
So did any of your sort of Actors Studio, when you're working in a cast like that, everyone coming from different acting backgrounds, do you read the script first? Did you rehearse at all before you started shooting?
We did not rehearse. It was a very short shoot. It was very, very fast. Rehearsal is tends to be in short supply in films anyway, except for the momentary rehearsal before a shot or a sequence. And Michael Almereyda's, it is not one of his ways to rehearse much. Mm-hmm. So no, there really wasn't any rehearsal. I was what I considered to be fortunate in having so much experience with it that I was very familiar. And of course, my castmates were coming to it new, the way one, as a rule, comes mm-hmm. to a film. But there wasn't really any static about that.
Mm-hmm. The other part of the film that I really enjoyed is that when you have to make the transition to the difficult relationship with your daughter, and I'm wondering what were the things from your own life that you put into that relationship, because you have to make that turn.
You mean as Marjorie Prime?
Yes.
Yes. Well, actually, the relationship is a little thorny, even in the first part of it, where I'm Marjorie and she's Tess.
Yes.
But the essential scene between us is later. And that I just think that's one of the most interesting things. I think it's such a smart script.
Yes.
And so, so it unfolds with the surprise that is one of the things that has always attracted me greatly about it. The question comes up about playing the prime, which I guess it's hard to talk about to people who don't know the piece. A prime is this piece takes place somewhat in the future, mm-hmm. and an artificial intelligence companion is available. And right. my character, Marjorie, who is losing her memory, mm-hmm. has memory problems, has one. And she has chosen to have it of her husband, except somewhat younger, in his 40s, mm-hmm. not 10 years ago when he died. But then. So John Hamm is playing Walter Prime. Later on in the story, after Marjorie's death, they would order one from, and Marjorie Prime appears in the piece. And Tess, the daughter, which it's a thorny relationship, addresses Marjorie Prime, and they try to work out. Being a prime has always been one of the wonderful challenges and joys of this piece and the other actors who have had the opportunity and delight of playing it, I think, feel the same way. It's something. That we've never exactly dealt with before. How do you prepare? What are the given circumstances of a prime?
Right. You're essentially
more about the relationship, but I really do feel mostly that the writing is so good that Jordan has given us what the answers are to what they're like. Mm-hmm. I remember also that in rehearsals, the author of the play, Jordan Harrison, was clear that they were they're empathic. Mm-hmm. They're learning. They don't know everything. They are programmed, but they're taught to know what they need to know. But they're good listeners, and they wish to help. And there are things they don't know, and then they find out or don't find out. And that's part of the fun. And it is really fun. To have a chance to do this.
Well, you know, one of the things that so impressed me about the film, of course, is the listening and answering between everyone. And is that one of your great, I think it's one of your hallmarks as an actress, is that you're a wonderful listener. And I'm very engaged watching you in the film just listen and answer.
No, that's a nice thing to hear. I don't know. I think it's what actors do. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things actors do.
Well, I find on the screen what I liked is that you let yourself be affected by the other actors, and you don't impose, which I think is very tough. Like when I think of an actress like Bette Davis, she's always imposing a larger than life opinion on things, which is a lot of fun. But sometimes it's fun to watch actors, and I think you're like this, and I think Robert Duvall is someone who's like this, where you're watching something unfold as the other actor is acting with you. Does that make sense?
It certainly sounds right to me. that sounds like what the fun of it is. Yes.
And that's one of the things I enjoyed about the movie is that there's, if you want to learn about acting, it's just a great ensemble cast of looking at the different styles of acting. And Tim Robbins also looks like he's just delighted to be working with you in the scenes.
It's really, the characters, each one is so good. I think an actor is delighted. Mm-hmm. You've got writing which keeps you up there. It's a great pleasure.
And I've heard you say that this is perhaps one of your favorite parts that you've ever played. Are there ever scenes, you know, that affect you so much emotionally that you need to take a break on the set, or can you just turn it on and turn it off?
Oh, I don't even know how to answer that. I guess I guess I just proceed.
I mean, some scenes are so emotional. Do you find yourself, you know, going at it with both barrels, or can you maintain a distance sometimes to when you're acting in emotional scenes?
I don't even know how to answer that. Really.
Okay. Well, then I'll move on to working with Michael Almeredo. How did you like working with Michael as a director? What interesting directing tips does he give you?
Michael is lovely to work with, easy, and but we have known each other a long time, and that's a great help. Mm-hmm. So there's mutual knowledge and respect, which is always such a wonderful thing to start with if you're working together. In this case, because Michael came to see the play that I had already been deeply involved with, mm-hmm. I sort of had the feeling that there was never something he really wanted changed about the interpretation or about the nature of Marjorie. Mm-hmm. And so actually the changes in the script, there are less changes with Marjorie's character, I think, than with any of the others. Of course, there are changes entirely. There is dialogue that isn't there, that was in the play. There is in some cases new dialogue. And there certainly are even new scenes, certainly a new movement of the piece. But because I got there first to this piece, and he responded to what it was he saw, the piece and myself in it, I never felt there was something he really wanted different. I mean, there might have been a moment here and there where he thought that maybe this and not that. But basically, in that sense, I was directed only by his overall script and his and the filmmaking itself, which happened fast. But I never felt that he was telling me something different as a way of proceeding with his character.
The other wonderful film you're in this year is Lady Bird. And Lady I'm Bird wondering, how did Lady Bird come your way?
My agent got a call asking if I would do it. Isn't that the... That's so nice.
Wow.
And I liked it so much when I read it. I felt quite fortunate. And then it turned out to be lovely. And Greta Gerwig is such a remarkable talent, which I already knew. But now, as a director, she's shown us something else. I think she's wonderful.
And
Saoirse and the whole cast, a beautiful cast.
Wonderful cast.
Yeah.
Laurie Metcalf from Steppenwolf also.
That's right.
And Tracy from Steppenwolf. Yes, there's a little knot of Steppenwolf people in it, yes.
And does Greta Gerwig have she comes across as having just a great sense of fun and energy. Is that something that happens on set?
My part isn't very large. I was there for probably... a week or so total, and not that many days even being shooting on the set. But it's a pleasure to be on her set. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think she cares about keeping it that way, and she does. Yeah.
Yes, it's a well. I have to say, there's been a wonderful array of interesting films this year. I have to go back, of course, and ask, because it's all over the internet, your screen test of East of Eden. When did you realize that your screen test was on?
Not a screen test. We were already there. Getting ready to make the film.
I see.
You know, we had the parts, and probably what it was, as well as I remember, is it was a kind of improvisation on the scene, but also my memory is, which is not perfect about that time, is that they were trying things out on ways of shooting it, processes to use, and at the same time, you know, we were improvising the scene and probably following prompts from Kazan as we, but I saw it recently again. It's really it's fun.
Yeah, it's very there's certainly a lot of chemistry going on. Did you know James Dean from New York at all? Were you in?
I just met him there with East of Eden.
And did you know Kazan before the director of East of Eden? How did he come to cast you?
Well, I met him. Again, I believe what happened is that sort of every young actress who was beginning to make her way, as I was one at that time, was sent to Kazan to see about the part that Julie Harris played. That's my memory of it. Mm-hmm. I think when I had an interview with him, he already knew he wanted Julie Harris for that part. And I don't remember that I did any reading, but he asked me at the end of the interview if I'd like to play the barmaid, the little part of the barmaid, which of course did.
With James Dean, I know there's all sorts of comparisons also to Montgomery Clift or Marlon Brando. Is that comparisons that we make or that people were also making?
People were making them at the time. I don't know either Brando or Montgomery Clift. Of course I knew their work and watched their films, but it was a time, maybe, of the rebel and the, and also they were such good actors. Maybe bringing each of them the sort of maybe newfound sense that came to the American theater in the probably the 40s when the Russian teachers and writers came over and began to really greatly influence how we proceeded in the theater and in acting.
Now, that was a film that was shot. Was it shot on the Warner Brothers lot or were you on location?
I was on location on both. Mendocino was used instead of Monterey because I think Monterey was maybe too modern. And Salinas, which I did not work in Salinas, but that was another location that was shot in Salinas. And some things were shot in the studio.
Your experience of working with Joe Van Fleet, who is just incredible also in the film.
It's just wonderful, yes. We had, alas, we did not really work with each other in that film. But she's wonderful in it. And I knew her a little bit.
Was there anything that this was a film that was shot in widescreen? Is there anything that you remember about having to accommodate working for the widescreen?
I think that's one of the things they were making a decision about when we were getting ready to shoot it. Was it going to be CinemaScope, which is what they ended up using? It was my first film. I certainly wasn't understanding any such requirements to adjust to a widescreen. I imagined other people were greatly adjusting to it, but.
And was it a set? Did people hang out together on the set? Was there, you know, was the work very intense?
It was intense, but yes, I think there was hanging out together. It was just that's generally true. There mm-hmm. is a little civilizations that forms each time, I think, in right. making a movie. And it requires lots of people. Mm-hmm. I'm sometimes, to this day, very, very aware of that. One time one is aware of it is if you listen, watch, that is the credits at the end of a film, there's that many people.
Mm, and yes. It's astonishing.
There's not just the actors, the cast, and the director, but with a film, great, so much more than in theater, of course, there are all kinds of crew and technicians and staff all the time.
Right.
Being part of each day's work.
I know that, you know, Kazan, in terms of making the film, I mean, and I don't know if you know so much about this, but it seems to be this mesh of some Hollywood actors like Albert Dekker and Raymond Massey, and then the new actor studio actors, which is James Dean and yourself and Julie Harris. And I've often, you know, you've often heard the history that there was some of the clash of acting. But do you think Kazan, that was sort of what he wanted in terms of the father and son relationship?
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I was not aware of these tensions at the time myself. But I certainly have heard the stories. And yes, and I think a way of creating frisson and tension was for him. Was to let what was happening between the actors, not just the characters, fire up and happen.
Right.
In the moment. So I suspect that between James Dean and Raymond Massey, there was that kind of not coming from the same planet. You know. Hmm.
But that's also what makes the movie so wonderful.
Exactly.
You know, their relationship. It's a beautiful movie. Did you go to the premiere?
I don't think I did. It's interesting. I haven't thought about it. The first movie premiere, big deal movie mm-hmm. premiere I remember going to was Five Easy Pieces, which was, oh goodness, later than that, 15 yes. years later, maybe a long time later, where I had mostly been working in theater. Mm-hmm. But why didn't I go to the premiere of East of Eden? I don't know. I don't remember anything about it, so I don't think I did.
Well, you mentioned Five Easy Pieces. Of course, we have to talk about with another explosive actor, Jack Nicholson.
Right, yeah.
And did he also has great charisma. And when you were cast, did you know the director, Bob Rafelson, before being cast in the film?
Actually, Bob Rafelson and I had met in New York. I did a couple of, there was a, public television had a 2-hour, yes, I think that's right. It was called Play of the Week. And I did two things on that show. One was a production of Miss Julie, and the other was The Master Builder, Ibsen's The Master Builder. And I believe Bob Rafelson was working in the, script department. Mm-hmm. And that's how he knew me. When he was getting ready to do Five Easy Pieces, I was in Los Angeles doing a production of Chekhov's Uncle Vanya, directed by Harold Clurman, at the Taper, the Mark Taper Forum in L.A. And Bob Rafelson sent Fred Ruse, who was working on Five Easy Pieces, to see me in that, to introduce me to him, basically, uh-huh. by sending him to the play. And they offered me the part in Five Easy Pieces. So I guess Bob had me in mind for it.
And that's a film that's another relationship film. And my understanding is you all moved in together and lived in a house together.
It was on Vancouver Island in Canada. And mm-hmm. we all stayed at the same motel. And that's my memory. And I'm sure it's right because I remember having dinner together around a table together every night because we were all there and Bob Rafelson at the head of the table. And it's such a wonderful collaborative way to work.
Yes.
And wow. Yeah.
It was really fun. There was very much that sense of collaboration and being together in this thing.
Yes. And,
a family in a house, which is what was happening in that part of the film. In the
It's a wonderful film. I mean, in addition to Jack Nicholson, any memories of Ralph Waite, who is so...
Yes, he was my brother. He was so wonderful.
He's
in the
so
film.
Wonderful.
We took him from the Actors Studio a bit in
oh,
New York.
Oh, I see. Yeah. He's so wonderfully uncomfortable in the film.
This is quite a family of sisters and brothers.
Yes. I love that film. I have to, of course, we talked about your wonderful theater work, and including working with Sam Shepard, and I mean one of the great voices, unique voices of the theater. And how did you meet Sam Shepard?
I actually first met Sam Shepard in a film that we were both in, a film called Resurrection, which Ellen Burstyn and Sam Shepard were in, and shooting it in San Marco, Texas. Mm-hmm. I had a little part. I played Ellen's cousin, I think it was. And on a day off, Sam invited me and a few of the actors. You know, he loved Austin, Texas, knew it, and for the day just took us into Austin. He knew a restaurant that he liked in a wonderful old building. And so that was really a lovely, generous thing to do. That's when I first met him. Mm-hmm. We weren't working together. I had no scenes with him in the film. And then years later, I guess the next time we really had a lot. I feel as though we've had a lot to do together, which has been quite wonderful. He wanted to do Steppenwolf, Gary Sinise directing, did a revival of Barry Child, and Sam wanted to work on it some more, on the text. So he was with us, and Gary asked me to do that play, a play I had seen in New York when it was first done, and was vividly affected by. And yet, when it came time all these years later to go back to it and read it, I realized I had been so sort of wiped out and overwhelmed with it that there was a lot parts of it I didn't even remember. So I got acquainted with it, and it was it's quite a piece and quite a role, and had a really remarkable time working on it. And that's when Sam Shepard and I first really worked together. He was with us in rehearsal because he was working on the script in Chicago at the Steppenwolf production, and I think the following season we took it to Broadway, and again he was with us working on it. And then many years later, I was walking away from a screening on the way to a party, and Sam stopped me on the street and said, "I'm writing a new play with a part for you." And I thought, isn't that grand? And then later I thought, oh, come on, that's easy to say, and so on. But not long later, Jim Houghton, who invented and ran, alas, he's no longer with us, but the Signature Theater in New York, called and said, yes, he really meant it. He did write and play, and Signature was producing. Sam had had a season at Signature, which is a theater where a playwright has an entire season of their own. And Sam had been one of their writers and was coming back with a new play. And so we had another spell working together.
And what do you think about, I mean, when I think of seeing his plays, you know, they're so visceral. The language is so beautiful.
When Gary Sinise first spoke to me about this, and I read this play, and I remember thinking, oh my goodness, this is such a male world. And at that time, which was in the 90s, Steppenwolf by at that point was 20 some years old as a company. And it had started out, certainly they had wonderful actresses right from the beginning, but it was very much kind of a male world and run more by the, at that time, it's not true anymore, but it was very much a male-run theater. I remember being struck by that. What am I going to do in this world? But so glad I got a chance to enter it. It was a valuable time of work.
Playwright, you know, we're on the show this month, we're talking about writers and all the great writers. And in addition, of course, to working with Sam Shepard, you worked with another amazing playwright, Horton Foote.
Oh, yes. I love him. And I miss him still. He's the most gallant and generous and charming person. Mm-hmm. And he loved actors. He had been an actor, wanted very much to be an actor, was an actor, and then moved to become a playwright and stopped acting. But he loves actors. He loves being with us all the time. Mm-hmm. It's such a treat. I had a wonderful time working in several plays of Horton's. Most notably, I got to do his wonderful play, The Trip to Bountiful, about 10 years ago.
Oh, which is a beautiful, yeah. One of the things I was struck by, something you said, that his characters envelop you. And I think that that's a beautiful phrase. His you know, wonderful, you know, sort of projects. Someone who also worked with Horton Foote was Robert Duvall. And then,
yes, indeed. Before I did, yes. Yes.
And then later on, you and Robert Duvall worked together.
We did a film, Falling Down.
Yes.
I played Michael Douglas's mother, but my scenes were with Robert Duvall.
And did you discuss Horton Foote at all?
I remember we probably did.
That's his big, because I remember when I was in school, I went to school at the neighborhood playhouse, and my teacher was Sanford Meisner, and he had taught Robert Duvall. So we would always have to go see Robert Duvall in films. And was there any difference in what what we used to call Meisner technique and then Strasberg technique, or is it all good acting?
A lot of people at the neighborhood playhouse, and lots of people since then, working on Meisner technique. I never worked with Sandy Meisner myself, and there certainly are differences. I once had a good friend who was going through the Eulalie Noble. We were friends from Seattle, mm-hmm. and we were rooming together, and she was going to the neighborhood playhouse. So I remember at that point learning some of the exercises, and it was so interesting. It's not the same as as Lee Strasberg's work. I've been a member of the Actors Studio for a long time, mm-hmm. but it's not inimical either. And they were all part of the same movement, I would say.
You mentioned working with Harold Clurman. Was he kind of a bridge between Meisner and Actors Studio? What was he like as a director?
He was one of the group theater. That was really his, more or less, I think, his beginning as a director. And the group theater was in basically the decade of the 40s. Mm-hmm. And Strasberg became it was founded, I'm trying to remember. It was a Strasberg and...
Well, it was in the beginning. It's such an interesting... it's Clurman, it's Stella Adler...
Well, Stella and Harold were married, and she became, although this was not her milieu exactly, yes. but she also became a major actor in the group theater. It disbanded after about a decade, made an enormous mark on the theater. And then my sense is that many of the major players... became very influential each in their own little orbit. So there became many teachers mm-hmm. who started with the group, Strasberg, Meisner, Clurman, Bobby Lewis. Mm-hmm. And they each became a sort of center of an orbit of students and actors mm-hmm. after that. Often, and Stella, certainly, she was a major teacher. And I think they had real differences and quarrels with each other, but they came from the same roots.
Yes. Very bad. It's fascinating to me. When you were in, do you remember what you had to, when you got into the Actors Studio, I had read that you actually had to audition twice.
I auditioned shortly after I first came to New York.
Uh-huh.
You know, didn't pass the audition, which is not uncommon. Mm-hmm. And a few years later, I don't remember how many, not a few, I guess. Mm-hmm. I auditioned again and did get in.
Do you remember what scene you had to do to audition?
You pick your own scene. Nobody tells you what to do. I think it was a Patty Chayefsky scene. Can't remember the name.
I'm just excited that you said it's Patty Chayefsky. I want to go back just a little bit because I know you grew up in Kansas.
I was born in Kansas.
You were born in Kansas. Were you a fan of William Inge at all? I know you worked with Tennessee Williams, but did you ever work with William
Inge? Well, I saw his plays. I never worked in one of his plays and didn't know him after I came to New York, but you know, I was aware of his work, certainly.
And your
I guess he comes from Kansas, too.
But that's how, your father used to put on plays in church. Do you remember what some of the plays were?
Oh, they were plays, you wouldn't know them, nor would I. He was interested in, not in putting on plays for the play. Mm-hmm. They were either biblical plays or I don't remember very much. I was a very small child, mm-hmm. but I know that's how it all started with me because I would go with him to the rehearsals. And it was, that's my introduction to theater, really.
Because we skipped over it accidentally, can we go back to our original first question?
Lois, do you remember the first movie that you saw?
I don't. I actually don't remember at all. I'm the youngest of six children in this family in Topeka, Kansas. I lived there for about, I think I was nine when I left Topeka. Mm-hmm. We lived a couple of years in St. Joseph, Missouri. Mm-hmm. In both of these places, my father was changing how the front of the church looked in order to put on plays there. Mm-hmm. And then we moved to Seattle when I was not yet 11, I think. We weren't much of a movie-going family, as I remember. Mm-hmm. So I probably didn't start to see movies much until Seattle, I guess. Mm-hmm. I'm often aware, I have been aware growing up, growing through my long life, that I knew a lot less about movies and had seen a lot less movies growing up than a lot of my compatriots. It's just, that's the way it was. I was not, I don't think my father ever went to the movies, though he mm-hmm. loved the theater, mm-hmm. oddly. It's, you know, I'll never quite understand it. At some point before I was born, he took night classes in acting and directing, the darndest thing.
Wow.
And was that the thing that encouraged you or inspired you to become an actor?
I think so. Yeah. I think this presence with him doing what he loved to do was certainly a very early influence. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A wonderful, rich influence.
One thing it's just going to be the last couple things I want to ask you is that every interview I have read, you just say, oh, I'm just lucky. I've been very lucky. I've just been lucky. Do you really? But you're so talented in addition to being very lucky. You're very, very talented.
It's nice to be talented and lucky.
Good combination.
And I have to, my last question, of course, what is next for you on the horizon? What are you working on?
I have a couple of plays coming up mm-hmm. in New York. One in the new group, which we will do in the spring. It's a new play by Lily Thorne called Peace for Mary Frances. And then we start rehearsing in July for a new play of Craig Lucas's called I Was Most Alive With You. Wow. And in that play, there are deaf actors and characters. And I, along with others, are learning sign language as part of my character in that, which is a lot of fun, great treat.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it is. At the moment, I'm doing some episodes in the second season of a television show called The Sun, which shoots in Austin, Texas, where Sam Shepard, and I've never been back there until now.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow.
Sam Shepard first introduced me to Austin, so that's fun.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, Lois Smith, thank you so much. I want to. Everyone should go see Marjorie Prime.
Absolutely,
it's an incredible performance as well as Lady Bird. But Marjorie Prime is a wonderful performance.
Thank you. It's hard to see because it's a very low budget movie. So while it opened to wonderful notices, It is hard to find it on a big screen, which is the best way to see a film, I firmly believe.
Yes.
But it is actually being streamed now, and it's available on Amazon. And so, you know, it's becoming more available. Though I remember I would urge people in Q&As and so on, See it on the big screen.
Yes.
It did open on a big screen, but it didn't have a long run around the country. And I would say, I'm so glad you saw it here at a screening because people are going to see it like this or like this or like this.
Oh,
and
gosh.
Just the other day, somebody told me you could now see a movie on your watch.
No, you can't, is my statement.
Well, it's a wonderful movie to see in the theater because you can have discussions about it afterwards.
That's true, yeah. And it's big is good. Being in a theater with other people where your entire attention is on, you know, you're not getting up to, you know.
Go get a snack.
Make dinner or, you know, yes.
So I agree. I agree. Well, I hope everyone goes to see Marjorie Prime. We'll do everything we can.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
We love it.
Also, see Lois in Peace for Mary Frances coming up in New York City. Also, I Was Most Alive with You. You can find Lois on Twitter at Lois Smith. Thank you, Lois. And you can buy Ileana's book, I Blame Dennis Hopper, now out in bookstores and in paperback. Also, like our Facebook page, the podcast's website is ilianaspodcast.com.
That's right. Lois, thank you so much. It's been such an honor, and I love that we have a family connection.
I do, too. Thank you.
I've admired you all these years watching you in films, and it's just such a treat to talk to you. You're a joy, and when I see you on screen, you have a very special light, and it really comes across. So. Thank you. God bless you. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
And as I like to say, everyone's life is like a movie with a beginning, a middle, and an end. This is the end of our podcast today. Thank you so much to Lois Smith. And for everyone listening in, Tamara, everyone have a great day. Thanks a lot.
See you next time, everybody.
So
thank you.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.